Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Martin Stevenson. Martin is the very recently retired Enterprise Project and Procurement Manager for the California Department of Water Resources. Although he didn't finish his career in procurement, he spent many decades there with state control agencies, such as DGS and CDT, and engineering-based agencies like Caltrans and DWR. Martin has multiple procurement and project certifications, including Certified Public Procurement Officer, NIGP Certified Procurement Professional, ISM Certified Purchasing Manager, ISM Certified Professional in Supply Management, and Project Management Professional. So hi, Martin. Thank you so much for being here today with me on the podcast.
Thank you, Kelly. Glad to be here. Looking forward to talking about procurement.
Yes, and we've established with all of your certifications and experiences that you are definitely qualified to be here talking about procurement, but I always like to hear a little bit more specifically about people's backgrounds. So before we get started, can you share a little bit more detail about your background and professional experience?
Sure. I grew up in the Midwest in Springfield, Missouri, and my parents were professors on a college campus. I left Missouri and went to University of Southern California. My sister was already there studying her doctorate, and I went there and studied political science history and spent a time in Washington, D.C. For a semester and in the politics back there. Right after college, I was in ROTC, so I went into the military. I was in the United States Air Force in B-52s in Texas and California from 1980 to 1985. And then I went for a brief period. I was in real estate. And then in 1986, I got a job application and got hired with the California State Office of Procurement. And much as I think almost everybody everywhere in procurement, I've heard one guy who I've dealt with, Omid Ghamami, he talks about talking to 30,000 people and only finding four people that had an intentional career in procurement. And I'm one of those. The place that I got offered me a job, it was in procurement, and off I went. So the experience that I had working at state procurement at the Department of General Services, DGS, I was there three times on and off. I was in Caltrans working in warehouse specifications and was a headquarters procurement manager there. And spent one day in the Department of California Department of Technology when it first started. Matter of fact, I had three jobs in 3 days in three cities, and something you can only do in a government kind of position. So sort of crazy. I didn't get fired from any of those, but it was just moving and transitioning from one organization to another. And one of them happened to be moving the same time I was. So anyway, that's basically it. So I ended up going through there and working at the Department of General Services and Caltrans, and eventually at the Department of Water Resources, where I ended my career.
Now, given the fact that you spent a lot of your career in procurement but didn't finish there, how did you utilize your procurement experience in terms of making that transition to a project management role to finish out some of those final roles?
Well, it's interesting. Procurement and project management go hand in hand. And for the most part, the better part of my career, I've worked with the IT side of procurement. And many IT procurements, they're part of an overall project. And so the last procurement that I worked for with Department of General Services as the procurement official was the California State Water Project Communication Systems Upgrade. And that's a statewide procurement. Took several years to accomplish, very detailed telecommunications specifications, and was estimated to be between $25 and $50 million. And it just took so long, but it was natural that there would be a sort of an interplay between procurement and a project. And so what I found was I was attracted to both the sophisticated procurements that we were having to do, but also started getting exposed to the project side of procurements in terms of how the projects were budgeted, how they were authorized, and so forth. And so almost every project has some procurement component to them. So even after becoming a project manager, they roped me into working on procurements to help facilitate the project. And so they tapped into my connections, and I was able to use the connections that I had in procurement to facilitate the procurements that we needed to get the tools, to get the services that we needed in our project. So that part was pretty much a natural fit.
Now, what parts about your procurement career do you think are unique, given that you spent them in the public sector versus the private sector?
Well, I think public sector, and I've listened to a lot of the Hero podcasts for Procurement Hero podcasts, and mine being in procurement in the public sector, I think the key to public sector is the equity, the balancing of bidder equity and fairness, and the need to get things done quickly and obtain the project products and services that you need. You really have to work through it fairly quickly, but you have all these constraints that the legislature mandates or the state procurement organization mandates. So you have to get public procurement approvals, and you have to have required documentation in order to move forward with the procurement. So knowing all the steps along the way can help you. In state government and in public procurement, state and local, and even federal, they have cooperative agreements. They call them co-ops and master agreements. And they've set up a lot of these so that you can use those to facilitate very quickly getting what you need. They also have purchasing credit cards to handle like repetitive smaller purchases to get you something instantaneously at a smaller dollar level. And then they go all the way up to requests for quotes for smaller dollar amounts up to maybe $10,000, maybe $25,000. And then invitations for bids and requests for proposals at a higher level. And then recently the state of California adopted a new, what they call RFI-2. It's basically a process where they accelerate the bidding process and shortlist competitors. And then they go in the bidding process, they go and they shortlist a couple of vendors and they start the development of products going forward. And so you have two competitors actually building the product that they want to provide you, and you're evaluating them. So by the time you get done with the procurement, you're already 3 to 6 months down the line. One of the bidders you may say goodbye to, or you may go ahead and proceed with both of them. So that's sort of fascinating, and it means that you've overlapped the process of procurement with the process of development, which saves a lot of time. And that's something that our new governor put into place and was helpful to get things going very fast.
Now, one of the things that I know you feel very strongly about is setting up people, whether in procurement or otherwise, but setting people up with the tools and training and techniques that they need in order to be successful. So when you think about people trying to take some time and develop themselves by contributing to their existing skill set, where would you recommend that people go to get additional information and support?
For the government sector, I recommend the National Institute of Governmental Purchasing, NIGP, and also the National Association of State Purchasing Officers, State Procurement Officers. And those are two reputable organizations to look for training, support, and certification. In the private sector, you have the Institute for Supply Management, the American Purchasing Society. You have contract and the International Association of Contract and Commercial Management, which is now CCM, and the National Association of Contract Management. And those all provide, they're private organizations that offer training, support, and certifications for both purchasing, supply management, supply chain management, commercial contracting, and contract management. So they're pretty good. One of the newer ones is the CPSCM, the Center for CPSCM Excellence, Center for Procurement and Supply Chain Management. And they offer a new certification that's more of a practical kind of a method for getting certified. But the other two, or the other ones that were for the public sector, NIGP, they work with some of the more respected procurement certifications. And so I generally steer people to those. One of the organizations that I think is interesting, up and coming, that I was introduced to through CCM, was a seminar that we had at Stanford University. And it was one of the presenters there was the University of Tennessee Haslam School of Business. And they have an entire program of collaborative contracting. And it's a unique approach, and well worth everybody's look at to investigate. For the state of California, because I am here in California, they have an organization called CAPO. It's California Association of Public Procurement Officials. And that's good for both state and local procurement officials. They're very active out here. And so any one of those, whether you're getting certified or you're looking for training on how to do things well, how to do public procurements, they're going to give you the experience that you need, the training that you need to establish your foundation to go forward and then build up to where, when you're a procurement supervisor or manager or the, you know, the chief procurement officer, you have that background, you have the credibility based on the knowledge that you have. The challenge for many folks working in California is the state of California has their own. And so they have their own training academy. And so they expect people to use their procedures. And so some of these may not fit individuals, but overall, they give you a foundation of credibility that you can use and use the techniques and the resources that they have at their websites and in their training.
One of the things that I think is so good about looking at different programs like this is that they all sort of transcend the individual organization that you might work for. And so is that perhaps why you tend to talk about techniques, right, as opposed to specific processes, which can be a little bit more organizationally specific? Over the time that you spent in these programs and working with different teams, what are a few techniques that you've seen as being particularly effective?
I think one is to begin with the end in mind. And it's a Stephen Covey, one of the 7 habits of highly successful people, but it's key, where are you going with this? And knowing the landscape that you're going to deal with, who are the vendors that you're going to have to deal with? What are their strengths and weaknesses? And how are you going to approach a given procurement? One of the things that California Department of Technology did was to start dealing with administrative issues up front. And even before they started doing that, that was one of the things that I tried to do personally and have my staff do, is to take care of the administrative issues up front. What they do is because the state, you have to be certified as a authorized provider. In some cases, you're seeking small business participation or disabled veteran participation. You want to reach out to the vendor community and find those people that might be able to provide that and make sure that their administrative issues are taken care of. It's happens that you go through an entire procurement, you get down there, and then you find out that no, they don't have their administrative stuff taken care of completely. They're missing this particular requirement or that particular requirement, and you lose the procurement to that person and have to go on to someone else. So by putting the administrative items up front, that's a big help, and it gets out of the way the potential pitfalls that you can have in trying to make an award. Also, getting agreement on the terms and conditions. Working for the state of California is like working for Avis. You know, they had the old slogan, we're number two, but we try harder. State of California's terms and conditions are only second to the federal government in terms of complexity. And when bidders first start working with you on that, they are a little bit intimidated. There are some things in terms of aspects of the procurements that can cause unlimited liability for vendors. And it's a narrow scope as to what that unlimited liability is, but you have to work with people to make sure they understand, get their attorneys to agree, which is a hard thing, and talk them away from the ledge that this is so crazy that we're going to do business with the state. But it's important to get agreement on those terms ahead of time, but also to work with them so that they understand that the terms are required to do business with the state, but also they aren't as onerous. If you're a responsible bidder and a responsible supplier, they're not as onerous as they might be. If you are not a responsible bidder, then these things are there to deal with you. And that's something that I dealt with as a expediter growing up early time of my career. So, but get agreement on the terms. And then especially in a lot of the stuff that IT that we deal with is licensing terms, making sure that you're understanding what licensing potential you want, how it would affect the eventual award, making sure that those terms match what you're trying to accomplish in your procurement. And make sure you review security issues and getting insurance requirements squared away. But also for state of California, many jurisdictions, they have requirements for including small, minority, women-owned. The state of California only has small and disabled veteran. The federal government has minority-owned and women-owned and disadvantaged business enterprises. So you're trying to include all those people in the overall scheme of what you're trying to do. And some bids actually focus on going just to them. And so you're trying to get the understanding of the vendor community of what you're trying to do and trying to work on making sure that they can participate and that you can get the products and services you need.
Now, I like the fact that you made the comment earlier about beginning with the end in mind, right? Being outcome focused. Do you have an approach to making sure, you know, we've talked about technique rather than process. Is there a way that you go about making sure the technique you've chosen is the right one for the situation you're currently in, as well as for the outcome that you're hoping to achieve?
I think that's a key. In government, you are required. I mean, there so many things about government procurement, public procurement are prescribed by regulations, by contract manuals, by procurement manuals, and the state of California has a state administrative manual, and then they have government code that requires you to do certain things, and then the state procurement division requires you to run your procurements in a certain way. And so choosing among the You'll have that policy, but you still have to decide the approach for each procurement request. And the types of approaches are generally based on the dollar levels and what you're trying to acquire. And so if you know exactly what you want, you're probably going to do a request for quote or an invitation for bid that basically says, here's what I want, you know, tell me how much it's going to cost. If you get into the level of high dollar amount where we sort of think we know what we want, in general, we want to do this kind of service, you're going to be in the nature of a request for a proposal, or maybe using that new RFI2 process if you're developing a system. And so depending on how it goes, the technique that you choose is key. And so figuring out, should I go in terms of getting approval from a state organization, the General Services Department, or should we run it, try to run it ourselves under our own, we get delegations of authority from the state procurement group, and we can do up to a certain dollar amount. But then if there is a large scale procurement, trying to figure out who is going to run the procurement, those kinds of things, you have to choose the approach that you're going to have. When services are involved, that involves a whole nother aspect to it, and requires you to sort of bridge the two of both getting the goods and services. And that generally for an IT procurement, that meant that you were going to do a request for a proposal once you got up above about $1 million or $2 million. But those co-ops and the master agreements that I talked about, in California, we have California multiple award schedules and other procurements that are leveraged procurements that allow you to make purchases with pre-established bidders and so forth. So you're having to look at this, you're walking through this cafeteria of choices, and you're having to figure out, based on what I need, how quick I need it. And that's the key, is almost everybody that wants to do a procurement wants to get it done fast. Unfortunately, some of them end up having to be, you know, the large scale request for proposals like we had with the state water project. So it's important to figure out which choice you want and to decide who is going to run this. And you need probably the harder thing is to establish enough people and enough resources that you can have an entire team taken away from their regular job to work on this procurement, in some cases more than a year. And so it's important to figure out which path you're going to take. And people are very creative. The crew that I had at my last job were probably some of the most sophisticated at knowing how to go through the process and which process they could get a job done with. And that's what you're looking to do, is to figure out for your customer, how are we going to get to that end the quickest possible way? And regardless of what people ask in procurement, they always want it fast.
Now, one last quick question for you, Martin, before we begin to wrap our time together. When you and I spoke previously, I appreciated the fact that you included information and data subscriptions in the tools that should be provided to procurement to do their jobs. Why is it important for procurement to be exposed to a lot of different ideas and concepts?
Well, I think that one of the things that you're trying to do is you're trying to be world class. That should be your goal. The goal of any procurement organization, to be a world class organization. If you're a small public agency, maybe that's a little bit daunting of a goal, but that should be the goal. And one of the things that world class procurement people do is they use subscriptions for services to help them in various aspects of their procurement arena. And one of them would be using things like Dun & Bradstreet to find out information about a supplier. And I had implemented Dun & Bradstreet when I was at Department of General Services. The hard part in a public agency is finding out that you that you, okay, we've got a vendor who's not very stable. What are we going to do with it? So there are some limitations that what you can do with that. But Dun & Bradstreet, we used Gartner consulting and Gartner subscription, which gives you access to IT benchmarking of how people do that. They have, just as some of the others like NIGP would do, they have like, what were you going to do for your first 100 days as the chief purchasing officer or the chief IT procurement officer? And so they have templates that you can use to help with that. One of the others that I like was GovSpend. They have a subscription that allows you to get access to purchases that people have made throughout the United States at state, local, educational institutions, federal government. And you can get an idea, especially when you're having to make a choice as to whether something is only available from one source. You can look at that particular subscription and say, no, that's available from several places. So we're not going to allow a sole source, but we will bid it out to these other people that we've found. And so those are some of the ones that that come to mind as far as working in subscriptions and so forth. And I think that they help people to get what they need and to make sure that what they're looking for is found. And you have things like as well, one other that I was thinking of was similar to Gartner is Forrester. They do more hands-on, more products. You also have one of the things that I think is good is Infotech. They're also a company that sort of uses a periodic table of procurement items and help you focus in on the areas that you need to get information on. And then companies called like the ISAM group out of Minnesota, they have gone through and worked with people to find how much software is going to cost, how much you could save on working with a particular strategy on software licensing. And they'll sit down at the table with you and you can get a subscription with them. And those are all subscriptions that help you be better at what you do. And I think it's just it's what a world-class organization would want to do.
Absolutely. So as we wrap our time together, Martin, I want to ask you the question that I actually pose to everyone that joins me on the Sourcing Hero podcast. And I always give two choices. So I'm going to ask you either to share your idea of what a sourcing hero is, or to explain how you think of heroism in the larger business context.
All right. The procurement hero aspect that I look at is people who want to get the job done regardless, whatever it takes to get the job done. I think that they had a long ago a search for excellence with Tom Peters, and he talked about a guy who was a manager at a local utility. There was a snowstorm, and he used to work on the line, and the snowstorm had caused a break in the electricity for the region, and he knew what needed to be done, but the thing was he had to have a helicopter to do it. He ended up renting a helicopter, took himself and maybe somebody else up to the area where the line had broken, and he took care of it. People who in the procurement realm, that is something that is in an emergency. And so in emergencies, people have the ability for government, they have the ability to go and do what needs to be done. But you have to think about it. You have to think about it in advance. And so the procurement heroes are the ones that are willing to go and get things done. And the thing is that it, in many cases, in the emergency that we had here in California for the Oroville spillway, people were at risk of dying. And if the dam, or if, especially with the fires, people do die and homes are lost. And so getting the materials that you need right away can save lives. And so the procurement heroes, I didn't get to work with them that much, but I would say that the procurement heroes that I think of most when that comes to mind are somebody like that in a snowstorm, or the people who are setting up fire protection and trying to fight fires here for Cal Fire in the state of California and the local fire departments, that getting the information, getting the materials, the services, and bringing the resources, federal, state, local, together. Those are the government procurement heroes in times of emergencies that I think of.
Now, we mentioned at the beginning of the conversation that you're newly retired, so I'm going to give you the option here, Martin, but don't feel pressure. If people listening into today's conversation want to reach out and connect or learn more, where would you suggest that we direct them?
I would go basically to my email. I haven't set up. I'm looking at setting up a consultancy for procurement here in the near future. But you can contact me at california.martin@gmail.com and be more than glad to send off a list of some of the items that I have that I recommend people look at, the lists of the subscriptions, the list of resources, and the list of books and other items that I think procurement people would be really interested in. So feel free to reach out, and we can have a conversation on that either by email or maybe over the phone or over a Skype or whatever. So glad to talk to you today, Kelly. It was a pleasure. Procurement's my passion, as it is for all the people there at your organization. And it's fun to be able to talk about it with somebody who really enjoys the entire enterprise of procurement.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero Podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well, and always remember that you can be a hero too.